Hello again, you're listening to The Business. You can contact us by text to 51551, by phone to 1857 15150, email thebusiness@rte.ie or tweet to @thebusinessRTE. With President Michael D. Higgins heading off to London next week for an official visit, we are now going to turn our attention across the water ourselves. We're joined by John Griffin, an Irishman who in 1975 founded the Addison Lee Minicab Company in London. Last year, he sold his company to the US-based Carlyle Group for a cool £300 million sterling. John, you spent, I know, your early years growing up in Mayo. How did you end up building up such a big transport empire in London?
Well, it wasn't difficult, but it wasn't easy either. It was hard work, but the competition was really very poor. And the taxi businesses all over the world are poorly run. And there was no difference to that in London. So, to be honest with you, I've always considered it, you know, that in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. And I was the one-eyed man. Nothing special, but better than the rest.
Well, it's pretty good eye you have, that's for sure. It's obviously about dedication as well. And you introduced technology. Wasn't that an important part of it?
Yeah, I think we went down the technological route. I used to have lessons at home on a Saturday morning when computers first came out. And I instinctively knew that this would be where we should be in the future. And that's proven to be correct. You can't take 30,000 bookings a day with telephonists. There has to be some other means by which they could be dealt with. And that, of course, was the computer. And it lives on and growing every day.
You see, this brings me to one important thing as I was thinking about it. Because I know that you're a campaigner over various issues and you're quite a battler for what it is that you think is a fair go at the competition. But there's taxis, there's cabs, there's minicabs, and we've hackneys, right? And just in terms of of the Irish view of this, a taxi, I think we all recognise. The minicab is, people call a cab in America, that's a taxi. But the minicab in London is like our hackney. Am I right about that? Where you basically order it before, you can't stop it on the street.
That's right. You have to order in advance, and they're not allowed to pick up off the street. What really happened was, in London in particular, the demand grew and the taxi fleet stayed the same. So they created a vacuum, and that vacuum was filled by people who had ordinary cars and would pick people up but couldn't do so off the street. It developed from there, and that was in about 1958. The taxi trade could have taken a view that they'd expand the number of taxis proportionate to the population. But they decided not to because I think they were driven by greed and the thought that less of them would have more, there'd be more demand per cab. But they made a mistake because the demand grew way beyond anything they could cope with. And we were born out of that vacuum.
Speaking of being born, you had Irish parents.
I had Irish parents and I was in Ireland. I was nine, but I was born in Willesden, which was what we call it, the independent state of Ireland. But when I was 1 year of age, I was born in the war. So I moved straight to Ireland and I started my education in Mayo. And there's an article written in which I explain that in Mayo in the summertime, we never wore any shoes. And the Guardian newspaper wrote an article from bare feet to Bentleys. So it was quite an interesting article. And, you know, for me, my problem was that having come over so late, I failed the 11 plus. But I managed quite well after that. But unfortunately, when I was 16 years of age, I went camping with a friend of mine and I milked a cow because I could. And I was showing off, really. And we drank the milk. And the milk I drank, the cow had TB, so they kindly passed it on to me. Thank you very much. Oh. And I spent the next 18 months, first of all, in that particular time, in the year in question, it was extremely rare to have brucellosis, which is what the form of TB was. So they took pieces out of me to try and examine to see what really was wrong with me. The outcome was when I went back to school 18 months later, it just didn't work, so I decided to, you know, plough a lone furrow, and off I went without any qualifications.
Wow! So no 11 plus, and no finishing school qualifications, and
none
you still
at all.
Managed to sell a company for £300 million.
Correct.
Wow.
Correct. So now what I'm doing is I'm looking, and I had a very interesting experience where a friend of mine in Camden phoned me up and said, "I have a person that you should speak to." He'd never phoned me before, but he's a likeable fellow, and I thought, well, I won't let him down. I'll come and have a chat with his pal. So his pal explained to me something which really made me think this is a winner. He was a person I took to. I took to his idea. The problem was I had a dinner booked and I had to leave. So I said to him, look, I gave him a cheque for 50,000, slapped it on the bar and said, put that into the bank in the morning and phone me in the afternoon.
This is a man you never met before. A man you never met before. Young man?
I remember his address. A young man. A man who had never... I didn't know his address. I didn't know his surname. I didn't know anything. I just knew the company he represented. I gave him £50,000 and I said, ring me in the morning. Well, since that time, to tell his part of the story, to be fair to him, he said, when you left the pub, I went into my car and I phoned my wife. He said, and while she was crying down one end of the phone, I was crying down the other. So that was our start.
And what was his business proposal to you?
His business proposal was he'd worked for RTE and he was explaining to me how he would branch out, form Irish TV through Sky, and he was operating with a couple of channels on a couple of pieces of a channel on Sky. They were renting a piece of a channel. So anyway, since then we bought the channel complete. We're now the freeholder of the channel, and I have put £2 million into the project so far, and we expect to I'm holding back another £13 million so that, you know, we are going to make this work. This to me is something I'm very keen on. I think it's going to make a great contribution to Irish life. And your caller Paul, who I enjoyed listening to, he would be an example where we would have made him into a major celebrity, because he'd be on Irish TV. We'd get to know him not just now, but in his playing days. That's something that happens in soccer in England, and that's something now. There's a lot of changes. Once Sky come into the game, that you're going to see, despite the fact I think that it's outrageous what they're charging, nevertheless, it will build the image of the game. We, in the meantime, can produce that or send that to America. We have now the opportunity. We're looking at that. Our target audience is 57 million Americans. And that's only the people that the diaspora of Irish people in America. So we are all over Europe. And we actually had a delegation who came from China to look at the model to see what it was we were doing. They'd heard about us. And they want to replicate what we're doing.
Wow.
Because in actual fact, what we're doing is we're taking local issues and we put them on an international scale.
On a global
scale. So if you have an affinity towards part of Ireland, you can access that, you know, through our channel, and you can see for yourself what's going on in your county, in your town.
It's the technology, again, element of your personality, no doubt, John. But I tell you, I'm very interested in this name, Addison Lee, because I only realised I saw it on when I was in London recently, and I was wondering exactly what it was. It sounded very posh to me. It doesn't sound like it had Irish roots at all. How did you come up with the name Addison Lee for a minicab company?
The word posh is a good word. I was in the office and I had decided that I was working for a company, and this company is run by a fellow from Killarney, Michael Sullivan, and we had great friendships and we remain friends today. But he offered me the opportunity. Unfortunately, he didn't have any proper jobs. I could only be a telephonist, and at £59.50 a week, a mean start. And he said to me at the time, he said, you can't live on £59.50 a week. I said, I can't and I won't, because in the end, you'll pay me what I'm worth. And so I joined in the September, and by the February, I was a director. So it was a pretty meteoric rise, and it gave me a lot of confidence, and I decided to do my own thing. And he was fine about that. We had no fallouts about it. But anyway, in the office, I was discussing the name. And there were lots of raggy, scraggy names in the industry. And a chap piped up who was listening, and he said, you know, he said, I lived in a squat in a place called Addison Gardens. And every time I told somebody that I lived in this squat, they all went, oh, Addison Gardens, like it was a posh name. And I thought, you know, that works. It impressed me. So Addison was born out of that. But it didn't have any rhythm, so I thought Lee would give it a bit of, you know, a bit more rhythm. So Addison Lee was born like that.
The name's not everything.
Don't get me wrong. It wasn't.
But it does present an image, though. It suggests to somebody something. It does conjure up an image. In terms of, you know, you mentioned there in terms of you said to them they'll pay you what you think you're what you're worth in the long run.
Yeah.
I watched you recently, and you were speaking on a clip of something that I was looking at. It may have been on a YouTube interview that you'd given before, and you spoke about partners and partnership and how important it was. But you really liked having partners. But that you insisted that you were dominating whatever happened, otherwise it wouldn't work.
Well, partners work only when there's balance. I mean, you know, like, you know, if a person like me marries a very feisty woman, it's not going to work, you know. it's different. All our friends whose marriages work, you'll find that they complement each other. And I think partners need to do that. And for me, I like to, I'm an ego-driven person, you know, which many of us are. And I like to show off, and I like to have a partner, and I like to show what I can do. It's the way it works for me. And now I'm looking with Irish TV and having a partnership with a couple that I feel, you know, great warmth towards, who I think are on a wonderful idea. And I think it's the timing's right, and I think it's going to be massive. I really do believe this is now. And if anybody was to turn on to Sky 191 now and have a look, you'll see it has a great feel, a great tempo, and it's very, very Irish, which is where it shall remain.
Well, just before I let you go, John, there's one thing which I think is very interesting to me, is that you had a particular business model, which was never a borrower be.
Yes.
You never borrowed any money for the business, ever.
I've never borrowed money. Don't get me wrong. I haven't worked with the banks. You know, we were turning over £2-3 million a week. Now, that was backed up by the banks. And, you know, you cannot work without the banks. Borrowing is a slightly different thing, because everything that I had in the office, every chair, every light bulb was paid for. But clearly, at £2 million a week, I had to find some backup from somewhere, because that would mean I had to service around about £3-4 million worth of debt. So that's a slightly different thing to somebody borrowing. You know, I mean, I was fortunate. I've been a saver all my life, and I've paid cash for most of my own personal things, and I never buy a car for anything other than cash. But it has helped me to run the business. But don't think for one minute that, you know, the rules are simple. If you've got a business and it's turning over £100,000 a month, you need £100,000 overdraft. If you don't get it, you're not properly supported. And banks don't understand that. People should explain it to them, that that's the way it works. And the bank is there for that purpose. Banks, particularly in Ireland, took on another role of becoming an investor and trying to become a multimillionaire business, because they saw they were lending money to people who achieved that. The problem they had was the timing was wrong, and they were involved in something they shouldn't be involved in. They weren't qualified to be involved in.
Indeed.
And as a result of that, the whole economy started to crumble around them, because they didn't act as banks.
Well, maybe we
now
maybe,
they're, maybe, yeah, maybe they're creeping John, back.
They're creeping
yeah,
back,
they went
indeed.
Back to, They're creeping back. But I'll tell you something, you know, we in London now, we have a massive, massive upsurge in market prices on property, and everybody's rubbing their hands and diving in. But the lesson has not been learnt. The bubble will burst. Bubbles burst. That's what they do.
I hope they're
creating a bubble.
Well, John Griffin, I do indeed hope they're listening to you, and that people will take heed indeed. John Griffin, thank you very much indeed.